Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen, coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. We are live for the next hour, and we're going to have celebrated author Kurgan Edward Stout joining us in just a couple of minutes, and he's going to be talking about whatever he wants to talk about. But before the show, we actually had a plan to come up with topics to debate, discuss, review, and invite you to call in on tonight. The toll-free number, well, not the toll-free number, the number to call in if you want to chat, yell, scream, shout, or just participate is 323-657-1493. That is the hotline for the episode tonight. A little quick shilling out for Kurgan before he gets on here. He hasn't dialed in yet. He's got a couple of books. You can go and buy them on Amazon. I've put the links on the show page, so if you'd like to go and buy his books and support the cause, I'm a big fan of doing that. Always help the our guests, and in this case, Kurgan is a co-host tonight, and appreciate the support you showed everybody who's on the show. Tomorrow night, at the normal start time, 7 p.m., it's an actual 7 p.m. Friday night dance party, we're going to have Aralee Brighton, and she's going to world premiere a song on the show called Unbroken. She wrote it, and she sang it, and she has gotten the release to let us hear it first anywhere else in the world, and it will send chills down your spine. I'm really excited for you to hear her. And, of course, the Friday Night Dance Party is also broadcast on Chat and Spin Radio Network and the Westar Radio Network in the United Kingdom. Thanks to Ian, Ron, and Joan this morning for my interview with them for tomorrow night's show, and then also Stuart over at Westar for all of the work that he does. We love working with you and hope to bring you lots more programming and fun guests and all of that as the year continues. But without further ado, my famous guest co-host Kurgan Edward Stout is now on the line. Kurgan, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm excited that you're here. I love the fact that we're going to do the show today, and we have all of these things we're going to like talk about and talk about what's politically correct and incorrect about them and why people should be upset or not upset about them and all that good stuff. We've got a good show, don't we?
Yeah, I think it sounds like it's going to be a blast.
It's going to be – well, before we get to the show, though, can we have the listeners get caught up on what's going on in you and your world and the kids and books and all that fun stuff that you've got going on?
Well, sure, and I think the most important thing people need to know is that it is a very good thing that you are on the radio and not televised, because I have a face right now. My face is so red and mottled and just – horrific.
Now, you told me that in the note before. What did you have done?
I had an IPL facial, and what this is, it's a laser photo facial where they shoot this bright light under your skin, and I typically have kind of a red skin. They call it rosacea, and so when you do this procedure, it hurts like hell, and the light goes under your skin and basically brings the redness out.
Wow.
So the redness goes down in your skin color, plus any sun damage that you have, any brown spots or what have you, eventually rise and leave. So you have a much nicer complexion, and it works wonderfully when you've healed. But I had one this morning, and my face has been on fire all day, and it's just I picked up one of my, just like, oh my God, what happened to you? So it's not pretty right now.
What kind of recovery do you have with that typically?
You know, usually I typically heal very quickly. This time I'm seeing a different person, and I don't know if they did something different or what, but I'm a little nervous. We'll hopefully I'll be my beautiful self in the next day or so. But typically it's just a couple-day turnaround, and, you know, eventually, you know, it makes me look younger, decreases wrinkles.
So you look
better,
like you're practically preteen right now.
Exactly.
Good. Yeah. Now, so can we all line up and go get one tomorrow? Because I would get in line to look 20 years younger. That would be great.
I'll just tell you, though, like I said, it really, it's, you basically grit your teeth for a good 40 minutes while they zap your over and over again, and it feels like really sharp rubber bands are snapping your skin while this light zaps you. And so it's not for anyone who's, you know, afraid.
And you've done this.
How
many times have you done this?
I typically do it every year or so, trying to keep
it. It's like good maintenance then.
Yes, but the hard part is that when you initially start, when somebody initially goes, they say, you know, do one session every couple months or so, maybe do three sessions or what have you, until you get to a certain point where your skin looks better, and then you do like every year as a refresher. So once you go through that process, it shouldn't be too bad, but, you know, I know people who take all kinds of medication and drinks before they go because it's just, it's not an easy thing to endure.
So is it really just designed for rosacea also, or I can ask because it's just us. Is it for vanity mostly, or is it for the rosacea? Which one is it primarily for, or is it kind of like a toss-up?
No, it's really, for me, it's all about vanity.
I'm on board
care
with
about
you.
I don't care that I'm going a little gray, but, you know, when my skin looks better, I feel better. And so ultimately, it helps my esteem as a result, too. So that's always good.
I like that. So for everybody who wants to get the Kurgan Cam going tonight, we need you to raise money. And so send your dollars tonight to P.O. Box. No, just kidding. But, yeah, so I can't imagine how – do you have to put any – are you going to put any ice, or can you do anything like a cold compress or anything, or is it really just hot to the touch, or does it hurt?
It's hot to the touch. It hurts. Definitely feels like a really bad sunburn, but I do have swelling this time, so I've done some ice packs, some other things, but it's just, you know, it's the things we do for beauty. I've seen pictures of you from your trips to the hair salon.
And I know
that you put just as much effort into looking beautiful as I do. So
I just went to go see Larry this week. Yeah, and so I absolutely, you know, I'm not ashamed to say I have gray hair. I've got wrinkles. I've got belly fat. I've got all of the things that you're never supposed to ever utter outside of your doctor's office, but it's true. And I'm fighting it every step of the way. I went to go have my hair bleached this week because I'm getting ready to film my music videos in a couple weeks. And right before the show, I redid my beard so I could get that going. It was funny because back in December, Larry did my hair right before I went to a Christmas party. And he says, go get some Just for Men for your beard, and you'll get light brown or dark blonde if you can find it. And I said, okay, great. So I went to, you know, I went to Target. They only had light brown, so I got the light brown. And it turned my beard dark brown. And I'm like, well, you know, it's better than the color that it was. So I was a little bit fine. I've never done anything on my own. So I ordered the dark blonde off of Amazon, and I got a 3-pack for $25 or something like that. So that showed up thinking, oh, I'm going to just change the whole thing and make it all light blonde. No, the light blonde from Just for Men, at least for me, did not work, and I followed it step by step. So I panicked, and I called Larry, and I said, Larry, what do I do? Because, you know, I've got to have, you know, the beard, and I don't want to have the gray, but I don't want to do that dark brown because it just looks ridiculous. So he sent me to Sally Beauty Supply, and the girl there just looked at me kind of, you know, she didn't laugh, but she was like, oh, we are so going to set you up. So she ran me around the store, got me the right hair color, right toner, or whatever you're supposed to do. And that did a really nice job, but it ended up being a little bit red in the sun. So Larry had me go back to the place and get something. It's like a purple or something. I guess it helps make the color kind of set, so you don't have the redding. But that's my pursuit of beauty this week. But man, it sucks, doesn't it? You know.
Well, I'll just quick story on beard dyes. I happen to be allergic, and because I've tried them, and unfortunately. You know, you're lucky your hair takes the beard dye. Mine is so white in certain places that it won't even take the dye. And then if I do try the beard dye, my face breaks out. And my hairstylist, he told me that what they do with people who have sensitivities to hair dye are they actually mix in sweet and low into the dye, and supposedly that counteracts the effects of the dye. But I actually tried it here in my house and didn't work on me, and I then went and tried a natural, like a henna kind of dye, and that, you know, lasts maybe a day or two. So unless you want to be dyeing your beard every other day, it's really not helpful.
Yeah, it's not helpful. Yeah, I'm ending up doing mine about once every about 10 days, 12 days, something like that. And that seems to work. And usually my hysteria, you know, wanes after, you know, getting it done. And then I see a gray hair or two and it's like, oh, it's time to get it done. I can't stand it. But my thing is I don't want to look like the jet black hair guy who's like 80 years old and you see like the black hair dye running down his cheek and you just know it's totally fake. I want it to at least have a resemblance of looking, you know, relatively normal. Not that my bleach blonde hair doesn't give it completely away, because, I mean, that's, you know, nobody has hair that's that color. But, you know, I'm okay saying I get my hair bleached. You know, I'm not really okay, I guess, saying it, which is weird. You know, why do I have a phobia about having my beard bleached or, you know, dyed and thinking that it's wrong, that that looks just as fake as the bleach on top?
Well, so are you dyeing your pubes? I guess that's what everyone is wondering.
Everything else is shaved on my body. So, you know, that's way too much information. So, but there we go. So any other grooming things that are going on?
You know, happily, that's it. The rest of it is just all about, you know, boot camp and family and work and writing. And
right. Well, how's the family? Let's talk about that. How's Russ? How's the boys?
They are all great. As you know, Russ and I got married in June. So
yes.
We're just newlyweds, essentially, after 12 years together. We're
you
in love
kids.
Like newlyweds, and our kids are doing great. We've got two boys, and they are 13 and 15, and so they're all about sports and school, and, you know, life is good.
Life's good. So are they playing any sports this spring? I know that you had all kinds of pictures this past fall of football and awards and things like that.
You know, Mason was doing wrestling, and I'll tell you, for folks who are not aware of just how tedious high school wrestling is, it is a drain. I'll tell you, he was at school every morning at 6 o'clock. They would practice for 2 hours before school would start. And then every Saturday when they would have a meet, basically you're there all day long. So even if your kid, you know, is wrestling and he does not get eliminated early, every hour and a half or so he wrestles again. So you sit around for an hour and a half waiting for the next time your kid wrestles, and by 4 or 5 o'clock you're finally home, and it really is – I had no idea what we were getting into, but he did really well. He's actually going to the state championships, and so he's very excited about that. But, you know, we were basically telling him, we will pay you not to wrestle next year. So we'll see.
Oh, Kurt, I love that. I love that. Okay. So how's what are you writing on right now? What do you got in the hopper?
Well, you know, I have a piece up right now at Huffington Post and LGBTQ Nation, and it's an interview with an author named David Pratt. And David won the Lambda Literary Award for novel for Bob the Book, and this was a couple of years ago. And it's
okay.
A really old novel. It's actually a novel about a book named Bob, as the title suggests. And so Bob, as you can imagine, being a book, he can't walk, but he falls in love. And he has human emotions, and he yearns for this other book, and he happens to be a gay book. But it's all about the story of this book trying to find his true love book when they get separated. And it's very charming because, you know, it's unexpected in the way that he writes it. When I first heard about it, I kept putting off reading it because I just thought, oh, this sounds like the stupidest idea of a book that is a human and can't walk but has emotions, and I just did not think this was something I would ever read. But I kept hearing great things about it, and I read it, and I'm really glad I did. So that was, as I said, that won some awards. And he has a new book out right now called Looking After Joey, and it is a novel about a guy living in New York who is single, gay, attractive, you know, personable, but he cannot find a boyfriend. But he fantasizes about this porn star that is his favorite porn star of all time. And through the miracle of I don't know what, somehow this character, the lead character, Calvin, ends up inside a porn movie universe. So he's in this universe where the house, and there's a guy living in the house who's attractive and straight, but, you know, his girlfriend's away from the weekend, and he's glad to, he'll, you know, get on with the hot guy. And, you know, the only people who come to the house are a pool you know, pool cleaning guy and a pizza delivery guy and a massage therapist. And so this guy ends up in this world with his and meets his porn star fantasy. And in this world, this guy Calvin, although he's an attractive New York guy, you know, in the real world, he's not necessarily as buff or as hung as the porn stars. But when he goes to the porn star world, everything about him gets more enhanced, and his teeth sparkle and he glows. So he's there, and he meets this guy and has this torrid, you know, passionate love for this porn star character. And then he wakes up back in his reality of New York, and the porn star guy is not there. But then later the porn star guy shows up, you know, free from the hackles of this porn universe. He shows up in New York City, but because he's come from this porn world where he really doesn't have any intellect or even any memories of family, like they'll, I think the character asks, the lead character says, well, don't you, you know, have parents or something? And he goes, yeah, I think they were in one of my films, like they left for the weekend and I was staying with my, you know, horny uncle or something. I mean, so this character, porn star's references are from other porn movies. So he comes to New York, and Calvin has to teach Joey how to survive in the big city. You know, what does it mean to be a gay man in the big city? What does it mean to survive in New York? And your references, and how do you be a real person? And so it's a very interesting follow-up to Bob the Book, because this guy David is so talented with creating characters that, you know, don't necessarily sound appealing on the surface, you know, whether it's a book or porn star. It could be very stereotypical, but he's able, through his wonderful writing, to create characters you really care about, and you're interested in their journey, and he really surprises you along the way, because they're not typical romantic comedies where somebody meets cute and then they break up and then they get back together. These are much more about the journey of, like, how do you find your soulmate? And it may be a surprising person.
Oh, wow.
So,
how,
you know,
fun.
Yeah, so I interviewed him, and so those interviews are up right now. On
Huffington
Post.
Okay, do you have links to those on your Facebook page? I should know that, but I don't.
You know, they're on my website, and they are on my Facebook page as well.
Okay, so I'll have to go check that out after the show. That is fun. You've been keeping busy.
Oh, yeah, you know, I try. And I'm working on a memoir as well, so that's,
yeah.
You know, whenever
How's
I can get
along?
Through it, I work on that.
How's that coming along? Is it moving, or is it just kind of catch as catch can?
It's incredibly difficult to write with kids, and I have a full-time job as well. And so it's have to, you know, I have to really force myself. You know, when I have a couple hours in the day, it's like, do I want to take a nap or do I want to write? And
yeah.
Usually the nap wins out, but I'm really trying to make it a priority, because interesting story to tell, and it's kind of a unique story that most people haven't heard. So I'm looking forward to getting back to that.
Well, we can't wait to read it, because everybody loves your, I mean, you know, the books that you've got out right now. I put links on the show page for Songs for the New Depression and also Gifts Not Yet Given on Amazon. And, of course, if you're listening for the first time tonight and have not heard award-winning author, best-selling author Kurgan Edward Stout, click the links, go buy the book, support the cause. Okay, there's our commercial. But you'll love the books. They're very well written, fun to read, and they're kind of hard to put down. I know when I was reading through them, you know, you say, oh, I'm just going to read, like, one more page, and then, like, 30 minutes later, you know, you're four chapters, you know, farther, and but, you know, it's fun reading. So I asked you to be on here tonight to be my guest co-host and to talk about current events and stuff like that, and I sent you a bunch of things before everything that happened today. Do you have do you have maybe a starting point you want to jump off from, or do you want me to just, like, pick one out of the pot and we go from there?
I think you should just pick one, because you sent – I was explaining to the kids what I was going to be doing with you, and I said, I have no idea how this is going to go. We're covering topics as diverse as, you know, Whitney Houston's daughter to, you know, the ports in Long Beach to, you know, we've got all kinds of topics we could be talking about, so I'm willing to just follow your lead. And
well, I only
best.
Put the labor dispute in the Long Beach port only because every time on Sunday, if I'm headed up to Long Beach for a meeting with my writing partner on the sitcom, Anthony Preston, you know, I just casually look out to the California Sea, which is right to my left, or right to my left. It's on my left. And this past Sunday, I was out there on my way up to Long Beach, and I stopped counting at like 16 ocean vessels, and I was just stunned at the fact that the port stoppage is still going. And, you know, in my day life, I still dabble in relocation a tiny little bit, and most of my business is now international. And I know that when I've got people who are getting ready to go overseas, I met with a lady last week, I said, I don't know right now if your stuff is going to go out of a California port or a West Coast port, or if we're going to ship it off to Houston or somewhere else just to get it on its journey. And she said, well, what's going on? And I said, well, you know, like the president was in town to try to get this work stoppage or work slowdown, you know, kind of resolved, but it's not resolved. And it's all over, you know, money and things like that. But I don't know. Do you know anybody who's impacted by the port slowdown?
I don't know anyone directly impacted, but what's interesting to me, I mean, you mentioned, you know, we've got high-level officials coming in trying to solve this labor dispute, and I know that Labor Secretary Thomas Perez was in, but it's not just the Long Beach port that's impacted. It really has a ripple effect throughout the entire shipping routes because, you know, if things are not able to come in here, then they're getting backed up at other ports where they may be coming, you know, planning to come into Long Beach. So people may not realize what a huge ordeal this is for that industry, but, you know, that impacts retailers because retailers are not getting their products like they do. And so it really has a ripple effect that most people are not really aware of.
You know, and the one thing that always rang true to me, if you are sitting on it, eating it, watching it, listening to it, wearing it, it's come from a truck someplace, and a lot of those trucks are coming from overseas. And if you're moving from overseas and, you know, you're sitting patiently for, because it's, you know, 2 to 3 months depending upon the country you're coming from to wait for your stuff to show up, and you're stuck at the port of Long Beach or the stuck at the port of wherever on here on the West Coast, that, you know, 2 to 3 month wait now becomes 4 to 6, and, you know, or longer, you know, just depending upon what's going on. And I don't know. I have interesting thoughts about that, but I'm still amazed that slowdown is still going on. But that's the unsexy news of the day. Now we have all of the stuff that everybody's going to want to call in and talk about. So if you do want to call in and yell and scream and just get vociferous with us, that's the biggest word I know today, Kurgan. The number is 323-657-1493. Let's start talking about... We're going to go all gay now. So the rest of the show is gay, 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 gay. How's that? Does that sound good?
I think that sounds really good.
Okay, fine. Let's talk about the gay agenda. I found out yesterday that the gays have an agenda. Did you know that the gays have an agenda, Mark Kurgan?
Well, I knew we gave away toasters when people converted, but I was not
aware. I thought
it was
on every fifth conversion.
Oh, okay.
Are you on a new plan? Because I didn't get that memo.
You know, I wasn't aware of the agenda either, but apparently we do. And I was glad
we have an agenda.
A straight person is actually advocating on our behalf.
This
was a really fascinating article that's on Huffington Post. But
give us the rundown on this, because I kind of knew, because it was coming from Huffington Post, it would be an article that, number one, I would like. Everybody who's on the Huffington Post, they're brilliant writers, insightful, and their news is accurate, by the way. That's an interesting topic for a different day. But this article came up and was like, uh-oh, what are we in for now? And then I started reading it, and I just fell in love with everything that it said on there. So, Kurgan, what were maybe some highlights or things that you took away from it?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, what's really interesting about this is that this is an article written by a guy who is not only a writer, but he's a pastor. And obviously, as a pastor, you put certain attributes on him of what you think he's going to be thinking and how he would potentially be in relation to LGBT people. But what was great about this article is he basically says, you know, I have heard there's a gay agenda, and I really wanted to get to the bottom of it. So I did a lot of research, really looked into it, and basically what those dang gay people want is, you know, they want the right to work. They want the right to buy stuff. They want to eat. They want to go to church and worship God. Well, some of them. They want families. They want to create. They want to feel fully. And, you know, as I'm reading through his list of things, I'm thinking, you know, he really hit it on the head. And in a surprising way, he really recognizes LGBT people. In his article, he really gives us some breadth, because it's not just, you know, being attracted to the same sex, but it's so much more than that, and it's an emotional connection, and, you know, for some it's a spiritual calling, and you know, there's so many nuances to being LGBT, and so I thought it was really great that this guy got it and he articulated it in a way that his message is going to resonate with people who may not listen to, you know, our typical gay spokespeople out there. Maybe because he's a pastor and he's a straight guy, they'll take it to heart. So I thought it was a terrific article.
Well, what I liked about this is that the guy's been a pastor for 18 years, and he has done listening, counseling, observing. He says that he served at house churches and mega churches, and one with pipe organs, and one with Marshall stacks, and one with wooden pews, and one with free Wi-Fi. So it's not like just this little pastor that wants to kind of, you know, raise a stink or try to get some publicity and get some people in the pews on Sunday morning to raise money to pay for his next Lamborghini or something. This is somebody who's, you know, he's been everywhere and seen every walk of life. And how he phrases the gay agenda on here for things like, you know, like you said, you know, gay people want to work. They seem to enjoy careers, searching to discover them, studying to prepare for them, honing their craft to develop them, using their gifts and talents to nurture and expand them. In related matters, as unbelievable as it seems, they also apparently appear to get personal satisfaction from being employed, from working hard, supporting their families financially, and from contributing to the global economy. You know, the style of writing that he uses, and I always think you're going to get more people with humor than you are with vinegar. Because we've got vinegar we're going to talk about next. But I thought, Kurgan, that his points were really valid, and especially coming from a straight person who's a pastor, and his experience as well just really had some nice kapow to it. If there was a Batman little cartoon segment on here, we would flash that video for you. But, yeah, I loved it.
Well, I did too. And I think, just as a side note, something came up for me the other day related to another news item, which is there's a great Broadway show that was done, oh gosh, 20 years ago, just about, called Falsettos. And it was just announced this last week that it's going to be coming back to Broadway in a new production. And it's actually about a guy who leaves his wife and child to live with his male lover. And through the course of this musical, his lover gets sick, and this is in the early, it was written as actually two one-act plays. The first one-act play was written before AIDS, and the second one was written after AIDS had infected the community. I think they were written about 10 years apart, but they put two together. So you see these characters change over time, and the reason I bring it up is because in 1994, took my parents to see a production here in Los Angeles of it, that was a touring production of the Broadway cast. And we went with my partner, Shane. And at the time, Shane was HIV positive, and we knew there were no drugs, and he was going to die at some point. And I took my parents to see this show because it had meant so much to me emotionally because, just as we were talking about with this article, the play articulates the emotional component of being gay to a largely straight audience, and it really sends the signal that we're so much more than, you know, what you think. And so I took my parents hoping that they'd finally make the connection, because my parents have always had an issue with the gay stuff, and they never quite understood it. And, you know, so I took them hoping that they would understand the journey that I was on, and as well as the emotional journey that I would be on with Shane, knowing that he was, you know, potentially going to die. And it was so odd to walk out of the theater, and, you know, I had tears coming down my face just because it's an emotional show, and just looking at my parents, and it was so clear to me that they still didn't get it.
Really?
So I think an article like this, you know, maybe coming from a pastor, they may finally, parents or anyone who's on that same kind of life path, it might sink in a way that it wouldn't when it's coming from another venue. So I thought it was a terrific article.
Well, you know, I also think we kind of live in a little bit of a bubble. You know, I think we're lucky in many regards, is that we live in Southern California, which is very much more accepting or open or liberal or whatever you want to think about whatever. And it could be the issue of LGBT, it could be race, it could be you know, the ecosystem or whatever. I think that we just have a lot more open ideas or open thoughts by people that we have here in Southern California than there may be in other parts of the country, especially, you know, smaller towns, rural communities where you just haven't been. Maybe you don't know a gay person, or maybe you don't have a gay friend, or the only stereotype that you've ever seen has been from the birdcage from 20 years ago, and that's the only thing that you've ever seen about a gay person that you've ever known. And, you know, I think it's really hard for a lot of people as they you know, grow up, if, especially if they're not in liberal, open-minded areas like we are here, where, you know, it's funny because I always tell everybody, I always assume everybody in Hollywood's gay until they tell me they're not, because that's just how I think. But, you know, I talk to a lot of people around the country, and they will tell me, you know, you don't know what it's like here. And it's like, I have no idea what it's like where you live. And I can't remember back to when I was growing up in Salem, Oregon, 100 years ago, because I didn't know I was gay at that point. I didn't understand any of that. I, you know, might have had an idea or two that, you know, something wasn't quite in line with what everybody else was doing, but I didn't know any gay people, and the gay people I knew were stereotypes. You know, the swishy, you know, flamboyant, not, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that, but that was my only exposure. And it's like, well, I know I'm not that, so I can't be, you know, but I don't really feel like I'm this. So to have this pastor put it out there in black and white and say, here's what they really want, and here's who these people are, I think a lot of people can identify with it, whether they're in middle America or in a major metropolitan area like we are here. And hopefully it will let people know that, you know, I'm okay, or I know somebody, oh, that's what they're really about. That's why they come to work every day. Oh, that's why they go shopping. Or, oh, that's why they went out to eat. Or that's why they want to adopt a kid. You know, because some people think, that's just insane. And to us, you know, we're like, well, it's just, you know, we just want to live our lives.
Well, exactly. It's all about familiarity. I mean, just this whole Bruce Jenner thing just points to that. Because whether he wanted to be or not, and obviously we still don't know the full story, but
mm-hmm.
seems pretty clear from all the hints they're dropping in the media that he is transitioning. And I, although a lot of people are giving him grief, I look at him and I think, you know, what a terrific life story. You know, as much as I hate the Kardashian family, I think,
right,
you know,
right.
he's able to put a face to an important, you know, topic that most people know nothing about. And so he's going to be a role model, like it or not.
Right.
And people are going to look at him and go, okay, wow, okay, so he's able to transition his gender and hopefully make peace with it and still be the person that we have come to love through, you know, years of following him in sports and on TV. And so, you know, once again, it's just putting your life out there and being open with it and honest and being authentic. I think, you know, we can all take a lesson from that, because the more open we all are, and then, you know, there's less for other people to be afraid of. And I think we're all making great strides, but I think, like with him, the trans community has a huge opportunity here to take a giant, you know, stride forward.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question, because I don't know a trans person. I know one trans person, Trucker Patty, out of Missouri, and I've met her. I went to her screening at Outfist this last year. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. But I don't have anybody who's, like, you know, next door neighbor that I know of, or anybody close to me that is trans. Do you have anybody that you know that is in transition or labels themselves that way?
You know, I do. What's really interesting, I know several people who are adults who have transitioned, but, and I've done a lot of research, because I admit, you know, 10 years ago, my opinion of trans people, or what I knew, thought I knew about them, was totally unfounded, and I was basing it on, you know, stereotypes and just misinformation. And one day I decided to start doing some research, so started watching a lot of documentaries. There's some really wonderful documentaries. Anyone who's got Netflix can look them all up. But there's one on trans kids in college. There's people who have transitioned later in life. But the person who comes to mind when you ask that question is, we have a friend who this family that goes to our church, and the daughter is transgendered, and she transitioned at age 7. So
wow.
she's gone on Anderson Cooper's talk show and Ricky Lake, and they've been very visible. What was interesting is when she presented as a boy prior to transitioning, you know, we would watch then him, you know, on stage when the kids would sing a musical number, and I always thought that I was looking at a little girl, and this is before we had any concept that she would be in transitioning. Every movement of this kid read as feminine. The way he then, you know, looked and the kind of the gestures and I was thinking either it's a, you know, he really is a little girl or he's incredibly gay stereotype, swishy.
Right,
know.
Right.
So it was fascinating to me to watch this child's journey to go from male to female. And initially when he started to transition, her name is Dannon, by the way, so I'll just say Dannon because the pronouns get a little crazy, but and she's public, so that's okay that you share her name. But Dannon, prior to transitioning, went through such a horrendous experience where she would experiment with girls' clothing, and her father would get upset, and she would try to stand in the girls' line in the kindergarten classroom, and the teachers would get upset. And she just always knew internally that she was a girl. And it was her hardest task was getting the adults to pay attention and listen to her, because everyone else kept saying it's a phase, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, there used to be a lot more debate about what to do about trans kids in terms of should you let them transition. Some people have argued you really shouldn't. You should try to take them in the other direction. So if they're veering towards masculine, you want to take them towards feminine or vice versa. And, you know, my take is it didn't work when I was gay. My parents, you know, as a kid, they would try to force sports on me and try to butch me up. And, you know, I wasn't that Nelly to begin with, but, you know, it struck me that they're doing with trans kids exactly what they used to do with gay kids in terms of trying to push us to be something that we were not. And so happily with Dannon, the parents became very supportive the more they learned. And she now presents as female. And I believe she's 12 now. I could be wrong about the age. But, you know, she's living her life as a girl and seems very content with that. And, you know, she's got a supportive family, which is great. And as I just mentioned with, you know, Bruce Jenner, I mean, she's public about it and allowing people to take a peek at her journey. So I think it's incredibly empowering for other people. It's a great lesson. I mean, if she can be brave about who she is, then the rest of us should have no problem with it.
Well, I, you know, the thing with Bruce and all of that, you know, the whole media thing just really kind of irks me to the nth level. But again, you know, unfortunately, you've bought into this Kardashian landmine. And I know, you know, 25 years ago when he married Kris, that was never even, you know, on the radar. And then this just all kind of happened. I think probably that happens to a lot of folks. They, you know, they are in a family and then a member of the family gets famous and you might have some notoriety for something else. But now, you know, you're swept up in all of this. I'm really ashamed at listening to some of the broadcasters. You know, I've heard on like ESPN and a couple of shows, and they've talked about it in the press a tiny little bit about how somebody is, you know, is making fun of Bruce Jenner. And I'm like, boy, I'm going to tell you, that is the wrong thing to do because, you know, at least for me, and I don't care if you believe it or not, but, you know, if you're going to go out there and make statements like that that you think are going to be funny, this is my opinion, so I'm not saying it's Kurgan's or anybody else's, but what you do is you make yourself look small, stupid, and uneducated. And I think that it really is a disservice to the networks to have talent on that thinks it's funny to make fun of other people. And I don't care if you're transgendered or gay or a different color or you came from the moon or whatever the case is. You know, when you have that type of quote-unquote talent being paid very handsomely, Kurgan, and to have them go on and say off-the-cuff remarks about, that, you know, what Bruce is going to do this way or that way really kind of pisses me off. And I don't have any skin in that game for him, other than just hearing that makes me feel very uncomfortable and sad for those broadcasters who are saying those things.
Well, I agree, but I think happily the good news is, you know, now with the advent of social media, there's a whole audience out there that is going to call people on the carpet when they say something that others disagree with.
Yeah.
You know, in the past, somebody like that would go on and say something and not be called out on it. And that person's
and then,
totally welcome.
And the rest of us would have to kind of like have to go, that really bothers me, or, you know, and it's kind of like the big bully mentality. It's like, you know, now that there's this whole social media thing, or, you know, all these eyes are on everywhere that we're at, you know, if you say something that's really out of step, you're going to get called out for it. We're not going to sit back and take it any longer.
Right. And, you know, what's interesting, though, is, you know, a lot of these people who make these stupid comments will say, well, you know, it's my right to my opinion. Well, of course it is. But it's our right to our opinion, too. So just because, you know, you say something stupid and you get shouted down by 5 million people, you know, we're not saying you can't say that. We're saying we can shout just as loud as you can. And I think that's
right.
A powerful tool that we all have. And I wish we would make more of that tool because, you know, I think if people actually would take to social media and give as much, put as much out there for progressive causes, you know, that many of us hold dear, I think, you know, we could make a world of difference. If people would talk about, you know, the current pay rates to if we gave that much attention to that or climate change that we do to talking about, you know, cute kittens on Facebook, just think of the wonderful things we could do in terms of moving our earth and our country forward.
I agree. Well, speaking of that, let's talk, I want to go back just only because I'm going to use a term from my friend Beth McDonald, who hosts KEZ 99.9's the Beth and Friend Show back in Phoenix. She always says, it chaps my hiney, so I'm going to say that, it chaps my hiney. Here's Pat Robertson, he is claiming that, and there's another article too, so I'm not going to just put the light on the gaze here, folks, I'm going to put the light on social media too for just a second. Pat Robertson made two claims today, or the two posts that I saw. The first one I didn't send to Kurgan because I saw it after I sent the note, so I'm just going to mention it. But so that way when I talk about this one, you go like, that's just as bad. He says that witches can possess pictures if you post them on social media. So if you are posting anything on social media, according to Pat Robertson, your pictures can potentially be possessed and demonized if you believe in that. So that is what you're hearing out of Pat Robertson. And so next from Pat Robertson, he is suggesting that companies are going to be forced to cater man-dog weddings. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I'd like to be invited just to see what it's like. But, you know, you'd have to laugh. Anytime that Pat Robertson is given media attention, you just have to laugh because the guy clearly does not know what's going on in the current world. And, you know, what's funny about his statements, you know, besides the fact that it's just laughable, you know, there are people who really care about their dogs. Now, I hope they're not having sex with their dogs, but, you know, if somebody wants to have a wedding because they love their dog so much, I really don't have a problem with that because there are some older people who love their dogs and they don't have a partner, and the dog essentially is their partner, except sexually. So if they want to have, you know, a party and a wedding and have flowers, I think that's, you know, perfectly fine. It's funny, though, because he goes on to talk about how, you know, if a florist has got to provide flowers for a gay wedding, you know, what's next, you know, man to dog or a polygamous wedding? What if a guy wants to marry five different wives and have five different weddings? And I'm
right,
thinking,
right.
As a florist, I would like that job, to have five weddings instead of one. You know, just think of the money you're going to make. But it's kind of, you know.
And here's what gets me. You know, it's sad. Because, you know, at the end of the day here, Kurgan, the comment really is about the florists. And, you know, we've all heard about the florists. The first one is my home state of Oregon. We'll talk about another one if we have time for that tonight. There's a florist in Oregon by the name of Sweet Cakes by Melissa. Owners Aaron and Melissa Klein have been punished by the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries saying they violated their state's anti-discrimination laws when they turned away a lesbian couple who sought a cake for their wedding in 2013. Also, Marjorie Silva, who owns Denver's Zucar Bakery, is now reportedly facing a religious discrimination complaint after she refused to bake a cake decorated with phrases like "God hates gays" in icing. So, you know, where is there a line to be drawn? Number one, if I were in a position to be getting married, thankfully I'm not at this point in my life, but if I were, I would want to go to a florist or a caterer or a whatever who's like, bring it on. You probably got a lot more money than that straight couple that we just married who wanted to do it all for a coupon and a Groupon. So, you know, you have companies that should want to embrace it. And if you don't like it, why are you in business doing anything? Because if you didn't have your private industry job as a florist or as a baker or something like that, you would have a job somewhere else. And just because you don't like somebody who wore blue contacts or had their hair dyed or wore a mini skirt doesn't give you the right to say, you know what, we're not going to sit here and give you service. You know, there's the no shirt, no shoes, no service thing, but I have a feeling probably anybody who's going into a bakery or a florist is probably wearing shirts, shoes, and would like some service. So I'm stunned. I think that it is very short-sighted of the people who are saying, no, we're not going to do floral arrangements for your wedding. We don't agree with it. You don't have to agree with a lot of stuff. They're paying you for a service. Do the friggin' service. Take your money and run to the bank and deposit it. If you do a great job and smile a little bit and fake it even, maybe they'll give you a referral, and maybe you'd get a straight wedding referral out of it. Oh, my gosh, what would happen at that? I don't know. I think it's so short-sighted of these folks, Kurgan, to go and say, we're not going to do this or we're not going to do that on the basis of religion. I think it makes them look stupid. And I'm not saying that as a gay person. I'm saying it as just as a common-sense person, as a business person.
Well, and, you know, luckily, at least in the case of the Oregon situation you mentioned, you know, there are laws on the books there, anti-discrimination laws. What, I don't know if you saw this, but in Detroit, I believe, just this week, I heard about a lesbian couple who were going to be giving birth.
Yeah.
Their midwife had suggested a pediatrician, so they went and met the pediatrician, had a nice consultation, I guess, and then, you know, they go give birth and they come back to do the wellness check for the newborn child, and they're met by a different doctor, and the doctor says, "Oh well, so-and-so's not here. She decided that she prayed on it and she couldn't be your pediatrician. And, you know, she was so uncomfortable about telling you this that she didn't even come into work today." And,
wow.
You know, in Michigan, you know, it is fully within the law to do that.
Right.
And, you know, in what world should a pediatrician be turning away a child, a newborn, who needs a wellness check? I mean,
right.
That doesn't even... where with any sense of my reality at all.
I don't know. And Mary Lou, who is a frequent friend of the show, she's a guest co-host. She's really a takeover artist of the show. She's down in Brisbane, Australia, listening live today, and she thinks it's a bunch of load of crap, and I'm using nice words. She used colorful language in her reply, but she says, you know, fear feeds off what it is offered to eat. And I think that really is why so many of these, you know, pastors and I'm picking, in all fairness, I know really great pastors and ministers and people of faith, and I've never had anybody be anything but generous and kind and nice to me. So all of my, you know, exuberation here tonight is off of these things that I see on the news, and this is one reason I don't really watch the news a lot, because you see this and it just gets you riled up. But you see, I had a post that I saw over the weekend. Somebody put on here of a religious pastor down in the South, and he was very impressed with himself, talking about God didn't make Adam and Steve, and you know, and it was the fact that I think he just kind of finally latched onto that, and then his congregation of like six, you know, he just kept going on and on and on for about a minute and a half, and I just kept thinking, this poor man. He is getting all of his validation in his entire life over ranting and raving and shouting and screaming, and unfortunately, to anybody outside of those six people that were sitting there listening to you, you sound like a world-class idiot, and I feel sorry for you. I don't know. I just the whole thing just kind of gets me. But so Pat Robertson, if you post pictures on your Facebook page, you know demons can go in and haunt you. So that's from Pat Robertson. There we go. Should maybe lighten it up a little bit here and talk about. Go ahead.
I just want to make one other point because this is just slightly. It's something I think about, but obviously I would like there to be anti-discrimination laws across the U.S. so that, you know, these situations do not happen. And I hope that people will continue to fight for them. However, I really hope for LGBT folks who are considering a wedding that they look into gay-friendly vendors to begin with, because I don't think it really helps
support our community.
Cause. Right. To be seen as trying to shut other people down. And obviously we're in the right in terms of, you know, we should not be discriminated against. But I think, you know, the religious right is currently using this as a talking point. Look, you know, our religious liberties are being attacked because this baker has to make a, you know, pro-gay wedding cake in, you know, or whatever. And
right.
I think, you know, we're becoming their talking point. And
right.
So I realize people in certain areas may not have a lot of options in terms of vendors, but I know, you know, when we got married, I found LGBT-friendly photographers who are absolutely amazing, and they're a straight couple, but they devote their lives to LGBT families, and that's become their niche because they feel so, you know, importantly that we should have the same rights as anyone else. So they've made that their cause, and so I'm going to support them, and I'm going to seek out, you know, gay-friendly people, and I'm also going to call out the people who are discriminating as well. But I think we need to do more praising and holding people up as examples, positive examples, than just feeding into the negativity, because I think that ultimately becomes, like I said, you know, one of the talking points that is used against us, and it, you know, becomes a stumbling block.
I agree. So I'm the first person to agree with you, Kurgan, and say go out and support your gay, you know, vendors that are out there, and gay, especially gay small business, you know, they rely, just all small business is important, but gay small business, you know, if you're part of the community, support it. And I don't think it's going to be, you know, with the internet these days, I don't, in most parts of the country, I don't think it's going to be hard to find people and services that are willing to work with you and are going to really make your event special. Wedding, anniversary, birthday, promotion, whatever the case may be. Okay, let's talk about Oregon's new governor. Kate Brown was sworn in today as Oregon governor, and this marks a milestone, Kurgan. And do you want to, for anybody who's living under a rock, do you want to tell us what's new about Kate Brown?
Well, what's new is that she's fabulously bisexual. She's married to a guy, but is openly bisexual. And what's interesting, though, is she's being sworn in because the governor resigned, and he had been, I think he was like a four-term governor or something, but
yeah,
he was
terms.
Very popular up until recently when fiance was caught turning a nonprofit organization that she ran into a for-profit organization and aligning herself with the state in terms of contracts and whatnot. So a cloud kind of went over her and their relationship, and, you know, he finally resigned after lots of drama, it sounds like. But so I think it's very exciting that finally we have an openly bisexual person in, as a governor is quite a step. And but, you know, Oregon's also very progressive, so I'm not entirely surprised.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this next year and a half or so goes for her, because with the resignation of the governor, the Secretary of State, Kate Brown, does take over as governor today, and it will create a new election, I think, in – I'm trying to look for the date here. It's in 2016, so it'll be sometime next – probably November. I guess November's happened is time for elections, so it'll probably be November next year. But it'll be interesting to see what kind of momentum and support she can bring to the table in that short period of time. That I think Oregon really needs to see if she wants to run for governor again. That would be interesting to find out. I'd love to see if that plays out. And the funny thing is, you know, from even though I've been gone from Oregon for, you know, 20 some odd years, all of these people that have been in politics for years, Kitzhaber, and I mean, I could list all these names that you've probably never heard of, Kurgan, but all of these people are people that I met or knew or worked with my dad. And because my dad was the head of HR for one of the departments for years, and so he'd played, you know, softball in the summertime with all of these guys, and I'd go and watch my dad play baseball, and we'd go out for pizza, and so I knew all of these folks. And so you see people that are, you know, being thrown out of office or things that are going on. Very interesting. I don't know Kate Brown, or, and at least the name is not familiar to me, so it's interesting to see how that's playing out. So I wish everybody up in Oregon a good 18 months with Kate Brown. Should we do maybe a little bit? I think we've got time for like one more Hollywood article. Should we maybe do that, or do we want to? You know what? I think we're just going to keep it gay. We're doing gay all day, gay all night. So here we go. We know that gay marriage came to Alabama this past week, but I think that the article, Kurgan, and I want to talk about is the gay marriage. It's good for you, even if you're straight.
Well, it is good for you. I think it's, you know, it's, first of all, what's going on in Alabama is a huge mess, just in terms of the Chief Justice, Roy Moore, who, I don't know if you remember, but he made a big stink several years ago wanting the Ten Commandments to be, I believe it was in his courtroom. But since then, they've had several debates about the Ten Commandments, and I think they've actually got it as some kind of statue somewhere in the on the grounds of the Alabama Supreme Court, something like that. But he made a big stink about that, so you can clearly see where he's headed. But he's really taken them back into the dark ages by issuing contradictory instructions to probate clerks so that in telling them that they don't necessarily have to follow the law as it was dictated to them by the courts. And so it's been a tumultuous time for all the folks in Alabama trying to figure out they can get married and where they can get married, because to this date, some districts are still denying them. So, but what you're talking about is an interesting idea just about how important it is for straight people to support LGBT marriage. And this guy makes some interesting points about, you know, how we all benefit if we all have access to health care, because it really we need legal recognition to get the health care that we need, and it lifts us up when we see that our relationships are valued as straight couples. And he just makes some really interesting points about why straight people should support gay marriage, and that is on Huffington Post right now.
I love that. You know, Kurgan, I'm going to tell you, I didn't know what tonight was going to be. I didn't know how much. We still have like 80% of the stuff that I sent over that we didn't even scratch, and the show's over. Did the hour fly by for you?
It did fly by. I will say one thing. One of the articles you sent to me was called, is Lady, basically it says, what's the headline? Lady Gaga was the biggest pop star in the world. What happened?
Yeah.
And it goes on to talk about her supposed demise. I will just say this. She's got talent, and she's made some bad career moves, but I think we will see a lot more from this gal. She's terrific. She's actually...
Well, okay, so go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, she's just got a lot of talent, and, you know, when somebody's got raw talent, talent will out. So I think, you know, they're talking about, you know, how her career is in the toilet right now. Well, I mean, people would kill for that kind of toilet career. So I think she's got a lot more to show us. There's capacity.
Well, I think that so much was made of her album Before Last, and then Art Pop came out, and there was such a hype about it that it was kind of like when Michael Jackson had Thriller released, and then he released Bad, and he was so distraught because Bad only sold like 8 million copies instead of, you know, 50 million copies. You know, Art Pop just, it should have just been released as an album, not, okay, here's the, you know, this changing of the hemispheres, we're parting the oceans, we're going to cure all the world's ills. This is Art Pop. No, it was just an album. But I, you know, I think the thing that she did very smartly is she said, okay, I need to take a step back. And she did that album with Tony Bennett. And I think that, didn't they, I think they won a Grammy a week or two ago for best something. And I don't know what the category is, but I remember seeing their name up there. So she's still winning Grammys. She's still selling records. And what I like about the album that she did with Tony Bennett is she just sings. It's not contrived. It's not manufactured. It's just her using her voice, and she is an angel.
Well, and I think, you know, she's got the talent, and I think at the beginning of her career, she was incredibly strategic in terms of what she was trying to accomplish. And I think with Art Pop, she lost her way, and she threw everything at the, you know, at the kitchen sink, trying to make a hit album and failed because it was really not as strategic. You know, you look at Madonna, every single thing Madonna does is so well thought out. Whether it works or not, doesn't always, but she really thinks it through of, like, what she's trying to accomplish. And I think if Lady Gaga were to the same strategy, she'd be better off career-wise. But I'm just happy to have somebody who can actually sing on the radio.
Oh, my gosh. She's an angel. Kurgan, we're out of time. This is it. I want to have you. I've had so much fun. If you've had fun, talk to me after the show. We'll Facebook and stuff. But I would love to do this again with you. This is awesome.
Boy.
Okay. Everybody, we're going to be back tomorrow for the Friday Night Dance Party. Era Lee Brighton is joining us for a world premiere, a legitimate world premiere of her song Unbroken. Nobody else has heard it in the world. You're going to hear it here first. And Kurgan Edward Stout, go buy his book, Songs for the New Depression and Gifts Not Yet Given, are both available on Amazon. I've got the links on the show page for you there. Kurgan, I will talk to you soon. And everybody, we will see you live Friday night. Don't drive distracted. Thank you.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.